This is my radio story on Algoa FM.
It's my radio story on Algoa FM, and we are with the one and only award-winning sports journalist, Neil Bissiger.
Thanks for the reminder. That was a long time ago.
A couple of awards as well.
Yeah, that was a Golf Writers Award many years ago up in Johannesburg, and a real highlight to be recognized by the golfing industry. I think many people know it's one of my passions, and to be acknowledged like that by the Sunshine Tour is amazing.
But also, I mean, you've spoken to a lot of people, and when it comes to sport, you're still that voice that a lot of people think about in Algoa country. What is that intro that you like using every time you're reading the sports?
Morning sports fans.
Yeah, that is that iconic statement that people... When did that start? When did that start, Neil, saying, I'm into sport and I'm going to report on sport?
It all started, my love for sport and sports journalism started when I was still at school, because my dad was at the Weekend Post in those days, and he could see that I had an interest in sports reporting, and I used to cover the club rugby and club cricket for the Weekend Post. And I mean, that was in the 1980s. We still used to phone from a tiki box at the various club grounds, and we used to ask for sports dictate, please. And this little lady used to take down your story that you'd written by hand, and used to phone in your story to the Weekend Post. And a lot of grey games I covered in those years. And that was the start of my love of sports journalism, was when I was literally still at school doing a little bit of extra work in my matric year.
Do you remember the time when you noticed technology is changing, when you didn't have to do that? Do you still remember that time?
Well, I remember distinctly the first time that I ever used a cell phone. That was fast forward a couple of years when I was working at the SABC. So that would have been the early 1990s. And the 1820 settler monument at Makanda Grahamstown caught fire. And they sent myself and a cameraman off to Makanda, and we stood outside watching the 1820 settler monument burn. And they'd handed me a great big Nokia 6110, I think they were called. And I remember phoning back to Cunningham Road SABC's building and talking to my colleagues on this cell phone. And it was the most amazing experience to be away from a tiki box actually communicating. So I go a long way back.
Way back.
Yeah. No internet in those days. I don't know how we did it.
All the editing as well.
No emails. Oh, we used to edit, we do interviews on Marantz's, which was a very respected recorder, a tape recorder in those days. So we'd do our interview on a Marantz. And then we'd download the audio in the SABC studio, and it would be recorded onto reel, onto literally like film reel, but it was audio reel. And you used to have a cutting and splicing machine that you'd cut your audio, and you were always told, hang the edited piece of tape over your shoulder. Don't throw it in the bin, because you might not be happy with your edit. And we used tape to tape the tape back together again. And don't throw that edited piece away until you're sure that you've made a good edit. And then by the time you'd finish your interview, you'd have a waste paper basket full of reel. So again, I go a long way back.
When you look at the time, obviously when you do an interview, these days you can do 20, 30 minutes and then you cut out what you need and it takes, a few minutes. Those days you had to make sure that you get everything that first time so that the editing doesn't take forever.
I guess you would. We learned the hard way to make sure that we had all the right questions and all the right answers, and that we had it all down. Yeah.
And when you moved from just the reporting and getting into radio as a broadcasting media, was that a big change? I mean, obviously you were running after stories, but now being the person in studio and reading sports reports.
Yeah, that process took a while. I absolutely murdered a news bulletin on the SABC at like 7 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. And I remember the producer looking at me thinking, where's this guy come from? Because that was useless. And amazing. Once I got that first on-air butterfly sort of out of the way, I seemed to be okay. And obviously the guys at the SABC knew that I had a passion for sport, and they sent me off to St. George's and to Boot Erasmus Stadium in those days. And I did a lot of phones in those days. It was phone crossings back to the studio. It wasn't much live stuff in those days, in terms of being in a studio. It was live on the phone from St. George's or from the Boot. And there were butterflies initially. Yeah. I remember my mates were sitting in the box or in the radio box at St. George's, and there was a game on, and I had a light-sleeved shirt on, short-sleeved sort of office shirt, and my shirt was flapping because I was shaking so much because I was so nervous. So it's a big step to go into broadcasting. People think it sounds easy now, but there were definitely some very scary moments initially.
Scary moments interviewing people. It's not all easy.
It's not. And if you I think the most dangerous is if you're in awe of someone. And I met the great Gary Player for the first time at Bushman Sands, which doesn't really exist anymore, out towards Ellisdale. And he designed Bushman Sands. So Gary was there for, and it was only a little 9-hole course. Was it? No, it was 18. It was a full 18. Of course it was. But Gary had been integral to the design of Bushman Sands. So he was there, and he put on a little clinic, and I got to meet him. And the first thing he said is, "How's your dad?" Because my dad sort of worked with Gary in the younger years, because my dad was obviously also a journalist. And I said, "No, my dad's fine," and all this kind of thing. So then he said, "Okay, ready for the interview." And we were sitting in the little clubhouse there at Bushman Sands, and I did this whole interview. We probably chatted for about 13 minutes, and I looked down at the recorder, and I hadn't hit the start button. I hadn't hit the record button.
So it's Gary Player that you've interviewed. There have been other iconic names that you've sat down with and interviewed.
Oh, the Bouchers, Graham Smiths of the world, Francois Pinard. I remember interviewing him. Had the good fortune of one or two chats with Sia Khaleesi, our local sports stars as well. You know, it's been a real pleasure to speak to the Dene Fanikaks of the world, Marizane Cups, Reinhard Tissink, Kyle Buckingham, all these wonderful athletes, these homegrown heroes that we've produced that I've been able to sit down and have chats with.
What's the one name that slipped away? The one that you wish that you'd interviewed?
The one that I wish I'd interviewed? You know who I really would love to have interviewed? And again, it goes back to my passion for golf, is I never got to interview Ernie. I think if I'd got to interview Ernie Els, that would have been a real cherry, because I mean he's an icon, yeah. isn't he? Yeah. And he loves his rugby too, and his cricket.
Oh, no. And his tennis.
And his tennis. Tennis. Mm. He nearly became a tennis player. Yeah, I think if I'd got to interview Ernie, it would have made me very happy.
You've seen the changes around Algo FM, or from SABC Algo FM. You've seen how, like right now, we're in a modern studio compared to what it was. What was your memory like when you think about some of the awesome things that have happened and some of the scary things that happened to you while you're on air?
While I'm on air, I think probably the most scary have happened in more the modern technology. Sitting right in this building, we had a massive computer crash maybe a year or two ago, and the whole studio went dead. Mm. And I think it was possibly more incredulous than scary, because everything was just gone. The DJ's eyes were wide as saucers. I sat there and said, "Okay, what now?" And there's not a whole lot you can do, is there? So yeah, those were rather scary moments. I think from an adrenaline rush point of view, there were a number of occasions where you're sitting in the newsroom and you're looking at the clock and you're thinking, "Oh, but such a great story. I want to get it on air. And you put the hammer down and you say, "Okay, I'm going to make sure that it gets onto the 11 o'clock news." And you put yourself in the red zone and you get down into that chair and you hit the button and you make it, that's it's a scary moment, but it's actually a actually a very rewarding moment to make that self-inflicted deadline. It can easily go into the 12 o'clock news, but you know what?
It's
a big story. I want to get it into the 12, into the 11, and you make it.
Also, crossings from the different events. I mean, we've been to some interesting places, some golf days as well. What's been some of your memorable stories on being on the ground?
Oh, yeah, I'm so glad you asked that question. I think the most insane was the President's Cup when Tiger Woods was in South Africa and he and Ernie battled it out to a half in their last match, and then Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus called a tie in the President's Cup. It was 2003. It was 2 weeks after my daughter was born. Wow. And I'd headed off down to George for the President's Cup. So that was pretty insane. And then a year or two later, same venue, the Lynx at Fancourt. I was fortunate enough to play in the Pro-Am ahead of the women's World Cup of Golf. They were playing at the Lynx, and I had a hole in one. Wow. On the 17th hole, which is called a prayer. So that tells you how intimidating the 17th hole is.
What did you get for the hole-in-one?
I got a beautiful Carol Boy's holder cork thing and a very smart pen as well. There were three of us. Wow. On that day who got hole-in-ones. It made the George Herald. Laura Davies, she's a legendary British women's golfer. She made one on the same hole as me. She used a 9-iron, I used an 8-iron, but I had a perfect shot. And then a young top amateur girl from Joburg made one on the second. But now we had a crossing back to Lance in those days, back in the studio, and I was walking down the fifth fairway at St. Francis Lynx with this LPGA Hall of Famer next to me. And we were doing a radio crossing back to the studio. So how's it going there? No, pretty cool, Lance. You know, just made a hole in one on the most difficult golf course in the world. I've got an 8-time PGA Hall of Famer standing next to me, and
life is good.
It was a pretty cool day. Yeah, that was a very special moment, I must say.
One of the things about you when people talk about Neil Bissaker is that you like bringing some of the lesser-known sports. You know, they always call them the minor sports, even though a lot of people take part into it, like mountain biking and those kind of sports, off-road stuff. How did you get into that? Was it something that you were always interested in?
The mountain biking specifically?
Yes. Mm.
I wasn't overly. And then Stefan Ferreira, who was with Sun International in those days and handling the Fisher of a Sun, we were both based down at the boardwalk, and a very serious phone call. And he says, I need to chat to you urgently about something. And he said, I'd like you to be my partner for a 2-day stage race on mountain bikes at the Fish River Sun. And I said, how long have I got? And he said, 3.5 months. I said, okay, that's doable. 3.5 months later, we were on the start line, and that was 7-8 years ago. You know, you start something like that, you think, well, it was blood, sweat, and tears, but why stop? Just keep going.
And you've broken your different limbs while doing it?
Broken my ankle, broken my collarbone, broken my elbow. I give my wife endless headaches. She says, I need to go for tests. Why do you keep falling off?
Well, here's the thing. You never injured your voice. You're always able to work.
I never injured my voice. Yeah, true that.
When you look at radio now, I mean, a lot has changed. From Neil Bissaker's seat, what do you think of radio now and radio in the future?
Well, radio now, quickly back to radio in the past, I think there's less of this kind of thing happening in commercial radio where a DJ and a presenter or a host sit across from a guest and talk for 20, 30 minutes. You don't have radio like that anymore, unless you're on 702 possibly, where you have these big talk stations. But I see that trend sadly moving away, because there's adverts and there's spot logs and there's pressure in the hour to pack so much stuff in. And I think that's that is the nature of modern radio, and I don't see it really changing going forward.
You don't think that it might change? It might depend on the people that are involved, because I mean, journalists, a lot of journalists are no longer in this business. It's more of influencers rather than journalists. That
yes,
could be an issue.
Yeah, that could be a way forward. But you know what? You need the pros to be able to steer the ship. You can't have a bunch of influencers trying to run a radio station because they won't last long. So they need the likes of yourself and myself to possibly steer the ship in the right direction. But you're right. I mean, you just have to look at the SuperSport commentary team at the Betway SA20 cricket.
Yeah.
And I mean, all the commentators, they're not, I mean, you've got, what's his name? Mark Nichols.
Yeah.
Who's he also has a history as a cricketer, but he's a professional broadcaster. As for the rest, I mean, even Pommy Mbangwa, he's a former Zimbabwean international. Mm. Pollock, Boucher, I mean, you name it. Graham Smith comes on the air all the time.
Yeah.
So all their commentators are former cricketers, and you see that in rugby. You see that. You see that in a lot of sports, even the Australian Open, which was incredible.
It was incredible.
record attendance of 902,000 people over the 3 weeks, if you count the qualifying week as well. And I mean, those commentators, they all former players, and I get it because you come with so much more sort of in-depth knowledge, your experiences in the locker room, and that. So I mean, you have an advantage as a sportsman. If you're listening, what career are you going to pursue after your short window as a sports person? Broadcasting seems to be the foil.
We've been on many trips where we've woken up and we can't even open our eyes because of sports quiz and all that. What's your favorite memory about your career?
I think it probably has to be meeting Nelson Mandela. Because he came to a school in the northern areas, and it was just the most insane couple of hours to be part of that and to actually be in his presence. Because so many people have said he had an aura about him, and he did. If you hadn't had the privilege of meeting him, he had something mystical about him. And I think I will never forget that day driving back to the office and thinking, how lucky was I that I was in a position, I was actually being paid to cover the story and to meet the great man. So it might sound a bit of like of a cliche story, but it certainly still stands out 25 years later.
It's a cliche to people who've never experienced it.
True that.
Those who have experienced it know that it's
They can identify. It was a very special moment.
Neil, thank you for joining us on My Radio Story.
Cool, man. Thank you.
This is My Radio Story on Algoa FM.